is The Guardian.
Regin Ahmed here on Gadigal Land with the full story.
This loss is massive for the entire Jewish nation. But for our community here and for Chabad of Bondi, the loss is unspeakable.
As funerals commence for the 15 victims of the Bondi terror attacks, one of the men allegedly responsible for the shooting, Naveed Akram, has regained consciousness in hospital and under police guard. At the same time, more information about the father and son has been reported. Police confirmed that both 24-year-old Naveed and his father, 50-year-old Sajid, travelled to the Philippines last month, although for what reason remains unclear. And the Prime Minister said in a press conference that there is evidence the alleged shooters may have been inspired by the ideology of Islamic State. Today, Justice and Courts reporter Nino Bucci on what we know so far about the alleged Bondi Beach attackers. It's Wednesday, the 17th of December. Hi, Nino. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Regid.
Firstly, one of the main lines of investigation into the Bondi suspects is that they travelled to the Philippines. How much do we know about that?
Well, look, we know they were there for 4 weeks, that they arrived on 1 November and left on 28 November. We know that Sajid Akram, the father, the 50-year-old, travelled on an Indian passport, and that his son, Naveed, who is an Australian citizen, travelled on an Australian passport. And we also know that they travelled to the south of that country, particularly to a city called Davao. And we know very little other than that about what they actually did there. And that's going to be very central to the investigation into the massacre itself, but it does raise questions about what exactly went on when the pair were over there.
What have experts told you about the south of the Philippines?
Yeah, look, the southern Philippines is certainly more stable than it was over recent years, is what I've been told. But there are, you know, still Islamic State East Asia cells. There's other terror groups that are there. There's training that can take place. There's other private military training you can do that's separate to Islamic extremism. So there's a sense, I suppose, of that being quite a dangerous place to be. And we know the official travel advice for Australians says to exercise a high degree of caution in the Philippines overall due to the threat of terrorism. The other thing we obviously have to keep in mind here is the time frame. You know, they returned home from this trip 16 days before the Bondi massacre. The proximity between that trip and this horrible event unfolding is something that is going to be very central in the minds of authorities.
Separate to the Philippines trip, what other elements are leading authorities to perhaps look at a possible connection with Islamic State?
Look, I think the main one obviously is this 2019 investigation into Naveed Akram. That's been reported elsewhere that related specifically to an Islamic State member and someone who, you know, was convicted of attempting to travel to fight with them and potentially even doing preparatory acts for a terror attack with them. Now, the reported connection between those two is a little unclear, but what we do know is that in October 2019, Naveed Akram was looked at by ASIO. It was a six-month investigation. They were looking at him because of his associates and I suppose the people he was on the periphery of rather than what he himself was doing. And the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, said earlier this week that effectively what had happened here is that the investigation was looking at Akram's associates rather than anything he himself had done, and that after that six-month assessment, the decision was made that, look, this guy doesn't pose a threat. Now, obviously that's 6 years ago, but the significance of that and the fact that he had already been looked at before, combined with the fact that in 2023, his father, who he lived with, was given a firearms license. He went about accumulating six weapons over the next 2 years, six firearms. And then you've got this trip to the Philippines in November. All those things are kind of different strands that authorities will be looking at and thinking, hey, if we'd pulled all these together, could we perhaps have known that something like this was possible?
And how much do we know about those flags that were allegedly found?
So there were multiple things allegedly found by police in the car of Naveed Akram. That includes allegedly homemade Islamic State flags. Police also say they found another one of those flags in the car, and they allege they also found some IEDs that were active. So improvised explosive devices that they say were active. And they say they found them in the car, but also in other locations. Certainly appears to be some of the reasons why these attacks are being investigated as potentially Islamic State inspired.
There's also been a focus on the activity of one of the alleged shooters, videos on YouTube that have been put out. What have we seen in those videos?
Yeah, so Naveed Akram, when he was a very young man, 17 years old, shortly before his 18th birthday, was a member of what's called a street Dawa group. The purpose of these groups is effectively to try and convert people to Islam. They gather on the street. In this case, it was in Western Sydney around Bankstown, and you know, passers by, they kind of say, this is the benefit of praying. This is the sort of stuff that you should do to be a good Muslim. Are you keen to sort of hear what I've got to say about Islam? So, you know, it's a sort of outreach for Muslim men, and particularly young Muslim men were caught up in that. And I guess what authorities will be trying to piece together now is whether there was anything that was missed at that time or anything they overlooked that perhaps could have foretold something that would develop into this horrible occurrence 6 years later.
We'll come back to that, but the Street Dawa movement have released a statement as well on this.
Yeah, the Street Dawa movement effectively say Naveed Akram came to some of our gatherings in 2019. He was never a formal member. None of us sort of associated with him outside of this, and they've denied any knowledge of him beyond that period of time in 2019.
There's also been a focus on the early background of the alleged attackers, where they came from, what they did.
Yeah, so in 2019, Naveed also finished off his TAFE education and started an apprenticeship as a bricklayer. He turned 18 that year as well, and we spoke to the only boss he's ever had, the guy who took him on as this bricklaying apprentice and that seen him through the past sort of 5 or 6 years since then. And we also spoke to a colleague who'd kind of worked with him on and off at building sites over the past 5 years as well. And, you know, the picture that emerges is basically a guy who was a super hard worker, really competent bricklayer, but someone who kind of stood out from the rest of the people doing that work in some no small part because of his religion. There wasn't many other, you know, Muslims who worked on site. It was a, you know, kind of blokey environment where you'd drink after shift and you'd talk about things that didn't really seemingly have any interest in Naveed. And, you know, in that context, one thing that his boss told me was that only a few weeks sort of before the end of the year, he came to him and said, look, I'm not going to be able to work until 2026 now. I've broke my wrist boxing, so I'll see you next year, effectively, which the boss thought was really strange given, you know, this was a guy who basically never took a sick day, never took leave, and all of a sudden he'd broken his wrist boxing, which he knew he was doing recreational boxing. And then he also asked for all his entitlements to be paid out, so all his annual leave and sick leave entitlements that he said he was owed for that calendar year. He wanted that all paid up in one lump sum. And look, in relation to Sajid Akram, we know that he is an Indian man, that he has been in Australia on a student visa since 1998, and that in 2001, which is the year that Navid was born. He transferred to a partner visa. Navid's his first child. There's two other children as well. And he, according to Indian authorities, he has travelled back six times in the past 27 years for family reasons, property matters, and to visit his parents. But that they noted that he didn't actually travel back when his father died. But look, the New South Wales Police have said on Monday, so sort of the afternoon after the attack, that look, we don't know very much about these people either. And certainly, as we've been kind of digging into them the past few days, there's not a huge presence, online presence, or a great deal of people who seem to know these guys. There is some suggestion that Navid particularly was a member of a hunting club, but that club has sort of said, look, anybody can sign up online. It doesn't necessarily mean he was an active member, and certainly that doesn't appear that he was a licensed firearms holder. So two people that, despite allegedly committing such a, you know, an awful act, there wasn't a great deal known about them, and they were certainly not people that were in any large extent on the radar of authorities before then.
It is still really early days, and you've said that some questions are going to be asked about what picture could have been pieced together as authorities maybe turned to other forms of extremism.
Yeah, look, I think that it's certainly not something that's as sharply in focus as it was a decade ago, but I think it's become quite clear that part of the world we're living in post October 7 is a world in which Islamic extremists are going to try to use that event and Israel's response, obviously particularly to that event, as a way to further radicalize people. There's been, you know, quite a lot of, you know, research done about that, and certainly there's still a lot of people that are really interested in mapping where Islamic State goes next. And it could happen, as this investigation by authorities unfolds, that we discover that was a radicalizing factor here as well, that Islamic State were able to in some way appeal to Navid and Shazid Akram in relation to what's happened in Palestine, and that may have been a factor here. But look, it is so early still, and Shazid Akram died, was shot at the scene, so we'll never precisely know what his motivations were for this. We understand Navid is being interviewed by police as you and I speak right now, and obviously the police investigation is ongoing and we can't really draw any firm conclusions at this stage.
Nino, thank you so much for going through what we know about this.
Thank you.
That was Justice and Courts reporter Nino Bucci. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert, sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.
Full Story is supported by Australian Industry Group, Australia's largest and most experienced industry association. From workplace laws to skills shortages and compliance, Australian businesses face challenges every day. Supporting over 60,000 businesses nationwide, Australian Industry Group is Australia's trusted business partner for compliance, advocacy and growth. Members enjoy the benefits of instant HR and legal advice, along with access to a team of experts in workplace relations, compliance, legal, skills development, apprenticeships, and more. Whether you're shaping strategy, managing people, or driving operations, Australian Industry Group exists to help businesses of all sizes thrive. Learn more and join today at australianindustrygroup.com.au.